Welcome to Temple of Health Radio Show. This is Dr. Susan Kolb, and today I'm pleased to have on Susan Shumsky, the author of Power of Auras. Dr. Shumsky has dedicated her life to consciousness and spirituality research. And besides The Power of Auras, she's authored Divine Revelation and Miracle Prayer, Exploring Chakras, How to Hear the Voice of God, Ascension, Exploring Meditation, Instant Healing, and The Power of Chakras. So she's had a lifelong study of spirituality, and her book is a wealth of information about topics that actually most everybody needs to be aware of in this day and time. Protecting your energy field, what is your energy field, the effect of colors and light, how to cleanse your aura or energy field, and just in general what we need to know in order to live in the world we live in. Thank you very much, Susan, for joining us. I appreciate that.
I'm so happy to be here with you today, Susan.
I think it'll be fun. Daniel Brinkley wrote your foreword, a very nice foreword, and we've had him on the show several times. He certainly is someone to recommend your book, and I enjoyed that foreword by him. Would you like to give the listening audience a little bit about your history? I didn't go into it too much, but your early study of transcendental meditation and how you actually woke up to your spiritual self.
I'd be happy to do that. So I've been practicing spiritual disciplines for more than 45 years. I was a hippie in the 60s. It was the San Francisco Bay Area. And at that time, I was what they called a flower child. And probably your listeners don't realize this, but the flower children, we were really into the whole idea of spiritual awakening and spiritual enlightenment. Our gurus were Timothy Leary, who said, turn on, tune in, drop out. Mm-hmm. That was his motto. And then, of course, Richard Alpert, who later became Ram Dass. And they were talking about exploring higher states of consciousness, altered states of consciousness, and so on. And I was reading books like Paramahansa Yogananda's book, Autobiography of a Yogi. I was reading the Buddhist scriptures. I was reading The Way of Zen by Alan Watts and other books by Alan Watts. And in Alan Watts' books, he said that we need to find a meditation guide. Well, in 1966 in the USA, anywhere in the USA, believe me, you would not go to the yellow pages to find meditation guide or anything remotely similar to that. So I asked a roommate, you know, I need to find a meditation guide. How do I do that? And my roommate suggested, he said, well, have you ever tried to meditate on your own, by yourself? And I said, well, okay, I'll give it a shot. So I lay down on my bed and I sort of prayed for or asked for a meditation. I had no clue what I was doing. I just, you know. And immediately I was propelled into an ecstatic state. There was a cord of energy that was rushing from the tips of my toes all the way to the top of my head. I felt like I was plugged into an electric socket, and this electrical energy was flowing through my body. And I figured, well, I guess this is meditation. You know, I didn't know any better.
Right.
So little did I know that I had my first meditation and also my first Kundalini awakening all at the same time.
Just by asking for it. That's pretty good.
Exactly. That's how it works.
Well, you were ready for it, too. I mean, if you're
apparently
not ready for it and you ask for it, you probably not much will happen. They don't want to blow you out.
Yeah, that's true.
So what happened after that?
Oh, well, very soon after that, a friend brought me to the Transcendental Meditation Center. And when I saw the picture of the guru, who was Maharishi Mahesh Yogi, he was the guru of the Beatles and of Deepak Chopra. And, well, at the time he was not. This was before that.
Yeah.
But just to identify him, that's who he was. And I immediately was very drawn to that and to his picture. And I made an appointment to learn transcendental meditation. I had to wait 6 months in order for that to happen.
Oh, my goodness.
At least it happened. And so that was August of 1967, during the Summer of Love, by the way. That's
right.
When I learned transcendental meditation. And then I started to apply to become a teacher not too long after that. But they didn't accept me on the teacher training course in Rishikesh, India. Mm-hmm. I was finally accepted for the course in 1970. That's when I became really involved with transcendental meditation and started teaching it and then joined the international staff. I was in his ashram for 22 years, and I was on Maharishi's personal staff for 7 of those years.
That's fabulous. I found out recently that a friend of mine from high school is running the TM Center in New York. So, I think Sam Katz. We didn't know a lot about that. You know, meditation was so important for spiritual awakening. But in high school, I did have a book called Super Consciousness Through Meditation. So I must have known something. And,
right, absolutely.
You know, that book made its way into my hands, and I don't remember buying it, but I knew something of what was to come. And I always thought Sam was very spiritual, and that was important back then. As you know, I was in Kansas, so I wasn't in San Francisco. But now I think I'm a little younger than you, though. I graduated high school when I was 72, in 1972.
Okay.
So,
right.
Yeah. So I wasn't quite, you know, the summer of love. I think I was still in junior high. So,
right.
Yeah, not quite old enough to participate. But certainly the ideas were there, and I had heard about TM and later on would meditation would be very, very important for spiritual awakening, just like with your path. It is critical for spiritual awakening. And that's, you know, we do many radio shows on meditation for that reason.
Awesome.
So what happened then?
Well, I went to India in 1970, and it was an amazing experience to be in the ashram there. An ashram is a place where you go to study with a spiritual master from India.
Mm-hmm.
So I was there in the ashram. I stayed there for 6 months, actually. The course was 3 months. Then I stayed on afterwards, and there were only 5 other people with me and Maharishi for 3 other months. So
that's
that
great.
Was a pretty amazing. That was probably the last time that ever happened for anyone.
Yeah.
In because he became so famous after that.
Yeah.
And so I had that kind of unheard of opportunity to be very close with him for a very long time.
And that is important. I want the listeners to understand that is important because of the energy coming off of the Maharishi and what that does for your energy field and your spiritual development. You want to talk a little bit about that, because I experienced that. I used to be tagged to have dinner with the masters coming into Atlanta, because I guess I could talk to them. And so I met many masters from all over the world. And that energy is really incredible.
That's amazing. That's awesome that you had that opportunity.
And it really was, because I met
well
many.
Level of consciousness, because if you weren't on a higher level of consciousness, that never would have happened.
Exactly.
So the thing is that when you're with a true spiritual master, there is an energy that exudes from them, and in fact, this is related to our topic of the power of auras,
right?
Because their auric field or their energy field is filled with what we call prana. Prana is life force energy. In Sanskrit, they call it prana. In China, they call it chi, and in Japan they call it ki. And that life force energy, when you have more of it, then you have a very charismatic aura. People want to be near you. People gain energy from you, in fact. And when you are in the presence of a spiritual master, you will gain this energy that is, you just gain it by osmosis, just by being in their presence. And some people call it Shaktipat. Some people call it Darshan. Darshan is literally a Sanskrit word that means sight. It means the sight of. In other words, the sight of this divine master will give you this energy. And it's powerful to be in their presence. That's the reason why there's the tradition of going to live with a spiritual master and being in their presence and being around them as much as possible. Because it's as if you imbibe their energy by osmosis, and you gain greater and greater energy, and not only greater energy, but greater spirituality, because that is what they're exuding. They're exuding this spiritual aura, this spiritual presence, this divine energy. It's the God energy that they're passing on to you without you really doing anything except for being near them. And they will transmit it through their eyes, through their voice, through their touch, and so on.
Would you like to give the example of what Jesus said when his, I guess the hem of his garment was touched by the woman who was bleeding? That's a good example of that.
Yeah, Jesus has there's so many wonderful stories in the New Testament that really talk about the master-disciple relationship. It's quite interesting. And in fact, I would recommend a book called The Aquarian Gospel of Jesus Christ, which actually goes into more detail than the New Testament does about some of the experiences of the disciples and the master and the actually mysteries of what takes place in that relationship. So there was a story of a woman who had been bleeding for 12 years, and she was very ill, and she had gone to all the physicians and doctors, and no one could help her. But she actually waited for Jesus to pass by on the street, and she just felt like if she would touch the hem of his garment, she would be healed. And in fact, she did, and she was instantly healed. And Jesus felt this pranic energy flow from him. He said the virtue, they call it virtue in the Bible, in that New Testament anyway. Jesus called it virtue, the pranic energy, he called it that. And he said, the virtue has gone out of me. And he said, and he noticed the woman, and he said, thy faith hath made thee whole. Right. So in other words, she had healed herself simply through her own faith, because she knew that she could be healed if she would touch the hem of his garment.
Right, yeah.
So that shows that people participate in their own healing, that they are actually creating it themselves. That's where the actual healing comes from.
And the field effect is important. People, you know, it is a field effect, and all the Valerie Hunt research and a lot of the other, that's what I love about your book. You go through all these research things early in the book. They confirm that it is a field effect. And so the aura, understanding the aura, which is what your book's about, is so critical, because this is a field.
Right, like Rupert Sheldrake and like Maharishi himself and all the scientific research they did on transcendental meditation and about how if a certain percentage of people will meditate together in groups, in fact, crime rate goes down, in fact, violence subsides, and that was actually proven through scientific studies that were done on transcendental meditation when they brought groups of people to certain places like war-torn areas, and they saw the effects of that. It happened very quickly. So the reality is we have a tremendous amount of power through our own inner consciousness, and we can transform not only ourselves but the environment. It's really important for people to understand that your energy field does not end with the edge of your body.
Right.
In fact, it goes out, and it's just like if you drop a pebble in the center of a pond, the waves on that pond will go out and will go out in like concentric circles and go out to the edge of the pond and then come back to you the same way that they go out, go back to the center of the pond. the same way that they went out. Similarly, our own thoughts, our own words, our own deeds will go out into the environment and affect everyone, not just ourselves, but the entire mm-hmm. universe.
Yeah, and transcendental meditation research has been really advanced, in my opinion. I attended a lecture where some of it was, you know, was reviewed, a medical lecture, actually. And basically, not only the effect of meditation on the environment, but the effect of meditation on one's brain is really interesting, you know, where they did kind of spectra scan type information about how the brain changes over time when people meditate.
Yes, that's true. And there have been various studies done not only on transcendental meditation, but on other forms of meditation as well, where they mm-hmm. measure the brain waves and so forth, and they find that there is coherence in the different hemispheres of the brain, and they find mm-hmm. that there's more of the theta and the alpha waves in coherence along all the waves. They've done quite a bit of research and found that really a meditator's brain is different than other people's brains. It just shows more what you might call coherence. There's more orderliness to the brain waves.
Yeah, and you know, if the brain is changing, it's not that hard to understand how the organs of perception are changing. Long-term
Absolutely.
Meditators have an expanded, I guess, set of different stimuli will cause different reactions because the organs of perception are actually expanded in meditators. They can sense energy. They can walk in a room and sense things. They can know, you know, precognitive abilities, all sorts of intuitive abilities are heightened with meditation, and that probably is part of the basis of these brain changes. I mean, the receiver gets more able to receive expanded signals, you know, like dogs. Mm-hmm. They can smell better than we can smell. Right. I mean, we can smell, but they can just smell better. You know, they have a better sense of their noses, and their brain is at a much higher level than ours is to sense a scent. I mean, they could smell cancer, they can smell, you know, drugs, they can smell, you know, they can smell money, you know, all of these things. We can't smell necessarily. I mean, not the average human can't do that. I guess there are some humans that,
right,
through disease or other injury, end up with a sense of smell that's really incredible. But
uh-huh.
But anyway,
right.
So the organ of sense of perception is expanded, and that, I mean, everybody who meditates a long time really recognizes that. I mean, it's pretty ubiquitous,
mm-hmm,
in my opinion. Yeah,
mm-hmm. That's right.
So that's how that happens. But well, let's talk a little bit about the, you want to give some more information about the aura itself and what that consists of, and how,
sure,
how you can look at it and feel it, and what you can do to protect it.
Mm-hmm. So the aura, I mean, the word aura comes from a Greek word that means like breath of air. And why would it, you know, come from that? That sounds bizarre, really. But the reality is, we were just talking earlier about prana, pranic energy. And prana, it means life force energy. It is the energy that gives you life. And it is said in the ancient scriptures of India that when prana is in the body, that's defined as life. And when prana leaves the body, that is defined as death. So mm-hmm. prana is this energy that is flowing through your subtle body. Your subtle body is your energy field or your aura.
Mm-hmm.
And it is what is giving life to you. The physical body is nothing more than a walking corpse. It has no life to it. It's only when prana is flowing through the subtle body and pervading and thereby pervading, permeating, and regulating the gross physical body, that's when you're alive. That's when you have heat in the body. As soon as prana leaves the body becomes cold. There's no motion. There's no heat. There's no activity anymore. And that
it also
body,
it also doesn't weigh as much. That's fascinating in your book. Isn't that interesting?
As well, yeah.
Yeah,
there's some studies on that that I mentioned in the book, The Power of Auras, mm-hmm. as well. So the reality is that this pranic body is one of the layers of our subtle body. We have what we call a five-fold sheath. And the different layers of that five-fold sheath are there's the physical body, which is what we call anamaya kosha. Kosha means sheath. So we have the anamaya kosha, which is called the food sheath, because it's made of food, sustained by food, and becomes food for something else after it's gone. That's mm-hmm. the physical sheath,
right?
The physical body. Then we have the energy body, or pranamaya kosha, which is the body through which prana flows and keeps us alive. And that would be the second sheath. And then the third one would be what we call manomaya kosha, which is the mental body, mental emotional body. And that's where you have your senses and your experience of the world and your subconscious mind, your beliefs, habits, conditions that continue on from lifetime to lifetime, which are stored there in what we call the manomaya kosha. Then we mm-hmm. have the vijnanamaya kosha, which is your intellect ego sheath that houses your decision-making process and your ego. Your ego means that which you think you are, who you think you are. Mm-hmm. It isn't who you really are, but it's who you think you are. That is your ego and intellect body. And then the fifth sheath is called the anandamaya kosha. That's your causal body. And your causal body is that which individuates you. It makes you a separate person and causes you to become an individual. So those are the five main sheaths that they talk about in ancient scriptures of India. And that comprises your auric field or your human energy field. And you were talking about how you would measure that or experience that? You want me to talk about that?
Yes, please.
So in my book, The Power of Auras, I have several chapters on how to sense or see or feel the auric field, your aura and the aura of people and places around you. In fact, you're already doing that. Everyone on this call is already reading auras. Because if you've ever met someone for the first time and you had a sensing about that person, maybe you felt something about that person. That person seemed angry. That person seemed defensive. That person seemed very open-hearted, very loving. Mm-hmm. You got a warm feeling from that person or a cold feeling from that person. Or these are ways of describing how we sense people's energy fields when we first meet them. Or mm-hmm. perhaps when you are walking into a place. For example, you walk into a bar, that bar that would have a certain vibration, or into a prison, or into a institution of some kind, perhaps a hospital or a mental hospital, or you walk into a place that has a really creepy vibe, maybe somebody's home, or you feel tension in the atmosphere. Maybe you can sense that people have been arguing in that place. Or mm-hmm. you go to a place that has a really high vibration, like you go out in the woods and you take a walk, or you walk by a lake or a stream or the ocean, and you sense the vibration there. Or you go into a sacred place like a church or a, for example, a spiritual vortex. Maybe you visited to a place like Machu Picchu, or you know, different spiritual places. You'll sense the vibration in those places. And that is what is reading auras. That's what it means by reading auras. Most people are more clairsentient, and they can feel auras more than see them. And many people who are clairvoyant, who are seeing auras, they can see them better with their eyes closed rather than with their eyes open. And I think you'll find that there are more people who can see them better with eyes closed than open, because very few people have the ability to see auras with eyes open with clairvoyant sight, external clairvoyant sight. So in my book, The Power of Auras, I teach you various ways that you can develop this sensing of feeling or seeing auras. Specifically, for example, I'll give an example. You could do what we call the mirror exercise, where you are in a darkened room or a completely dark room, and you're sitting and or standing in front of a mirror, gazing at that mirror, at your own forehead, for example, and seeing with what we call soft focus vision, which is a kind of vision that you see auras with. And the soft focus vision, if you've ever seen one of those magic eye pictures, that's their embedded pictures, when you stare at them with soft focus vision, all of a sudden the three-dimensional object will pop out of the picture. That would be soft focus vision. Your eyes are not converging and focused on one spot. It's almost as if you're seeing with double vision because your eyes are not converged. In normal vision, our eyes are focused on one point. In soft focus vision, it's as though it's actually double vision. Your eyes are, you have two eyes. And so when they're not focused, when they're not converged, when you're not focusing strongly, you'll see like double vision. And that would be the easiest way for you to see auras, is to see with soft focus vision. In my book, The Power of Auras, I do teach you how to see that way. I have some exercises to help you with that are right there in the book, and some pictures of, they're just black and white pictures that help you to see with soft focus vision. So that's just one of the, I don't know, dozens and dozens of exercises in the book, The Power of Auras, to help you to be able to develop your ability to sense and see auras.
Yeah, there was one time I was giving a class on auras, and I decided to have everybody practice. And so we dimmed the lights, and I was shooting different colors into my aura. So I would make my aura purple or green or red. Of course, I wouldn't tell them what I was doing, but the majority of the class could tell right away what color it was. So that's
awesome.
A way to practice. That's a little exercise to practice. Because people can, they can, and some students close their eyes, and other ones, you know, look at, you know, kind of with their rods, not with their cones, kind of like you said, the unfocused vision, and could see the colors. So when you think a color strongly, a focused thought, you can imbue your aura with the color, which is kind of interesting.
Right. And in fact, that is one of the things that I teach in the book, The Power of Auras, is how you can use color to enhance your aura, to raise your energy, energy field, or to feed you colors that are missing from your energy field, colors that you need more of. And you can learn how to test which colors you need and which colors you don't need. That's another thing I teach in the book. I teach people what we call intuitive kinesiology, or dowsing, and you use a pendulum or L rods or Y rods or various. I teach how to use these various tools to measure the aura, and also how to use a pendulum chart so that you can figure out which colors you need more of. And then I teach you also, I have a whole chapter on how you can enhance the color in your energy field by, for example, using the color in your interior decoration, or by wearing it, or by imbibing it. For example, you could take a glass of water, and you could either get a colored glass itself, or you could put a filter, a color filter, around the water or around a pitcher of water, put it in the sunlight, and in that way the color will the water will be infused with that color, and then when you drink that water, you're imbibing the color. Or you can actually also eat eat certain colors of food. You know, for example, eat a wide variety of food colors, and you'll imbibe all these different energy colors, energy into your body, actually. So, for example, eating an orange and eating beets, you know, these have different colors.
Yeah, Dr. Gabriel Cousins, in his book Spiritual Nutrition and the Rainbow Diet, says that a lot of times we actually seek out the color of the food. You know, that's what's so important. Like when we're eating blueberries and, you know, things that are indigo, and you're trying to expand your third eye. So that's very interesting. Color is important. Let me share this with you. As a trauma surgeon, I noticed early on that patients coming in from car wrecks to be seen in my office, of course, they were pretty banged up, so they would dig through their closet to find blue. You know, they would wear blue in, because even if they normally didn't wear blue, because blue counteracts red, and they had plenty of red in their aura from being banged around. And orange should not be worn by cancer patients because it can cause cancer to grow, but orange is good for asthma. And green is the best overall healing color. I had a color therapist give one of our Noetic Science meetings, and she was hired by this large company of ambulances to decorate the inside of the ambulance, and she chose green because you don't want something too stimulating or too unstimulating, and green is a good healing color. And you never want to use gray in a room because people can't make decisions in a gray room. So if you're trying to sell them something, they'll never buy it. And blue is the color of trust. So if you're in business, you want to wear a blue suit so that people will trust you. And black is mysterious. So if you want to go to a party and meet people, don't wear a black dress, wear a red dress. People will be attracted to the red. So it goes on and on and on. But color is just fascinating.
Right. In fact, in the book, The Power of Auras, that we've been talking about, I have these color charts that show the effects of colors, not only in health, for example, what colors will enhance certain things in health, but also psychologically, some of the things that you've been mentioning, you know, the effects of colors and how they can be used in various ways. So
yeah, orange
means cheap. It's a fascinating subject.
Yeah, orange means cheap. You know, you look at Home Depot and Howard Johnson and, you know, some of the fast food restaurants that feature orange. And so when you see orange, you go cheap, which is sometimes good, sometimes not. Then, you know, it's interesting. They said they never had any car that was yellow other than a Volkswagen. Isn't that interesting? No yellow cars out there. I think they had a yellow Corvette one time, but, you know, it's just, it's unusual to see the color yellow in a car.
Mm-hmm.
Just very interesting things.
Well, yellow is the intellectual color. Yellow is, if, for example, if you are doing some kind of study, or if you're giving a speech, or you're involved with intellectual pursuits, or maybe teaching or learning, that would be when yellow would show up in your energy field. That's another thing that I teach in the book, and that is what colors mean in your energy field.
Right, when you see them.
I really
enjoyed that section because some of that wasn't stuff I expected. You know, I learned a lot in that section. Yeah. So do you want to talk a little bit about what the different colors, I mean, if you say you have an auric camera that takes a picture of your aura and you have these colors, what does it mean?
Okay, so, for example, the red color means that you have more of this, what we call pranic energy or life force energy in your field. For example, an athlete would have a lot of red. Now, as I'm describing these colors, what I'm describing is the brilliant, the bright colors. If they're dull colors, if they have gray or black in the colors, then this would not apply. But if the colors are vibrant and the colors are, that means the colors are healthy and the energy field is healthy, then these are some of the meanings. The red color means that there is either passion, you're passionate about something, or maybe you're even in love, or also it could mean that you have a lot of chronic energy, life force energy. You're athletic, or, for example, a child would have a lot of red in their energy field, meaning they're very mm-hmm. active. They're very filled with life force
right.
energy. The yellow color, once again, is the intellect color, which means that you're involved with some kind of intellectual pursuit, intellectual activity. You are studying, or you're teaching or something like that. The green color is the color of life force energy. It's the color of nature. It's the color of balance. It's the color you may be in the medical profession. You might be a healer that might show up as green in your energy field. Or you're just a very balanced person who's very healthy, filled with robust life force energy. And that would also show as a green color if it's very soothing and healing and that sort of thing. If you have that mm-hmm. vibration, you'll show green. The blue color is the color of spirituality. It means that you have spiritual pursuits. For example, mm-hmm. you're a meditator, or you're religious, or you are championing a cause. You're very interested in developing your spirituality, or else you're just a very pious, shall we say, person. That would be a blue color. The orange color often means that you are a people person, that you are, for example, a salesperson, or somebody who is a social butterfly, or you're interested in social pursuits. That would be the orange color. The magenta color, or what some people might call a violet or magenta color, would be someone who is a clairvoyant, clairaudient, or clairsentient. They have higher perceptions, higher abilities. They've developed some kind of subtle sensing. And then there's the indigo color, which often means somebody who's in the has some kind of high ranking, perhaps in politics or in the clergy, something like that, is often indicated by indigo, or else somebody who is spiritually inclined, also is indicated by indigo. So these, and indigo just means purple, by the way. And so I believe those are the colors, main colors.
And then if you have a white aura or a bright light aura.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the white aura indicates that you are have a tremendous amount of spirituality, as long as the white color is bright white and not a dull
mm-hmm.
white, because dull white
right.
may indicate that you are actually ill, seriously
right.
ill. But the bright white aura means that you have developed a tremendous higher consciousness. Great spiritual masters will often have a bright white aura.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's seen in the Bible, you know, around Jesus and Mary and
mm-hmm.
sometimes the disciples, they had this aura, and that was indicative of the, you know, huge amount of spiritual energy within their field.
Right, the pranic energy, spiritual energy, high spiritual pranic energy would be indicated
mm-hmm.
by that, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I had...
Or even golden. Golden also can indicate that.
Right,
golden aura.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
I had people come to the center that were very evolved, and this is a surgery center, not a spiritual center, but, well, I guess it's a spiritual center in some senses, but I could sense their aura as they approached the front door, and I was back in my office.
Wow.
I could tell they were here because of the, you know, because I could feel the light in their aura. And sometimes
mm-hmm.
I didn't even know they were coming.
Wow.
So,
amazing.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, well,
cool.
You know, I mean, if it's real and you have developed the organs of sensory perception through meditation, you should be able to do that if you think about it.
Exactly.
I mean,
because right.
their aura extended, you know, 100, 200 feet. I mean, it really did. It was interesting.
Right. Now, that's another thing I just wanted to touch upon, and that is that you can measure the energy field or aura through using
right.
A dowsing tool, which I
mm-hmm.
teach you how to do in the book, The Power of Auras. There's a way that you can just approach the person with holding these L rods, what's called L rods, in a certain way.
Mm-hmm.
And as you approach the person, the edge, depending on your intention, you know, what you want to measure, you can measure the edge of their, for example, their Anandamaya Kosha, meaning their causal body, which is the biggest sheath,
right?
Biggest of the fivefold sheath. And when you measure that, the dowsing rod or the L rod will move. It will indicate the edge of the energy field. And you can use these rods or these tools to do all kinds of amazing things, to not only measure the aura, but also even enhance it, to clear it. These are really great traditional dowsing techniques that I teach in the book, The Power of Auras, that are pretty awesome.
Yeah, I taught a class at Emory Medical School, actually a couple of classes of Emory Medical students. I taught them to do the L rod on the aura and the pendulum for, you know, answering questions. And, you know, they never made it a part of the permanent curricula, but for a while at least they had students that were interested in that. And some of them were quite intuitive. It was good.
Mm-hmm.
Good to see
Absolutely.
Medical students being intuitive. So,
absolutely.
Yeah, we need more of that.
I was going to say, we really need a lot more of that.
We really need a lot of that, especially with healthcare. You know, they're spending, I've told this story before on the air, but it's a good example. I think one patient who had really, really bad seizures was actually sent to me by the CDC. The CDC sends me patients sometimes because of my intuition. In any case, the patient had seizures that were horrible and had been worked up at all these different places and you know, probably $50,000 worth of tests, and still had seizures on all these meds. And I walk in the room and I look at him and I go, "How much Diet Coke do you drink every day?" And he goes, "1 liter." I said, "Stop it." And of course, the aspartame was giving him
goodness.
The seizures. So, you know, I mean, how much money could be saved in health care? I mean, think about it. And it doesn't have to be a doctor. I mean, it could just be a medical intuitive asking that question.
Exactly.
I mean, it, you know, not everything's that simple, but, you know, good Lord, there's probably a lot of things that are that simple, and we need to really do that in order to start saving money.
Absolutely. And, you know, Hippocrates said that food is your medicine, is your best medicine, and I think that
also your best poison.
Exactly. And I think that's really best for people to pay attention to their diet, because what they're putting in their mouth is often what is making them ill.
It is.
It's just really important, so vital.
Yeah, and the public is not educated. That's why we do this radio show, talk, you know, GMO and
exactly.
nanotechnology and every. I mean, they don't know what their skincare products have, what their. You know, because when you put it on your skin, it goes in your body. They don't know what the food
exactly.
is. They don't know anything.
Right.
And so they're literally shortening their lives because of their things that they don't know. And did you
very,
see on YouTube?
True.
Did you see on YouTube about the snow that won't melt when heated? It kind of acts like plastic. And it's from all over the world now. You ought to take a look at it. It's on YouTube. People are getting the snow because we just had this bad snowstorm. They're getting the snow, and the snow's not melting like normal. So, you know, I mean, seriously, there is something very interesting going on in the world that was not happening, you know, 10 years ago or 20 years ago, that is affecting everybody. And the hair analysis that I'm getting on people now, almost everybody has high levels of barium and the other things that we know are being put in the chemtrails.
Hmm.
So it is the chemtrails
wow.
are affecting everybody, and they're affecting the snow too. I assume it's the
right.
chemtrails. I mean, the snow is coming through the atmosphere.
It,
I don't know what else it would be.
When you mentioned it, I assumed that was the chemtrails.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
I mean, I guess they'd have to do an analysis to prove that, but, you know, things are different, and we're breathing it, unfortunately, so it's something you need to be aware of.
Yes,
and
that's right.
And do some detox, because,
I
mean, even though you might not be able to not get it in your system, you can certainly get it out of your system.
Right. It's really important for people to develop their immune systems with all the various toxins that are in the atmosphere at this time. And I believe that one way to really strengthen your energy field and thereby strengthen your physical body is by doing some of the methods that I recommend in the Power of Auras. For example, the breathing exercises or pranayama, which brings more pranic energy into your field, and enhancing your energy field with some of the things that I mentioned, like the color, various ways of using color, including visualizing color in your field, mm-hmm. including meditation, which I also talk about in the book, The Power of Auras. A certain particular meditation that I do recommend in the book and that I actually teach in the book is a color meditation that will lift your vibration and give you more energy. And you can also use sound, like using mantras, which I also recommend. And you know, all these things I have, I think, I don't know, two or three chapters on how you can enhance your energy field and increase the energy in your field. Also, you can use intuitive kinesiology. You can use dowsing to increase the energy in your field, literally by using mm-hmm. the rod to do that. So there's so many ways that you can improve your immune system and improve your energy. And, you know, auras, that's why I say the power of auras, because there's power in prana. There's power in enhancing and increasing the energy in your field. And you will become more powerful. If you have more prana in your field, you will become more powerful, more healthy, more influential, more prosperous. You will enhance the field and thereby live a more rounded, more happy life. And, you know, it's awesome when you have more pranic energy in your field. For example, the greatest politicians, the greatest movie stars, famous people, celebrities, very often they will have a lot of prana or this life force energy in their field, and that's why people are attracted to them. Mm-hmm. That's why you say, oh, I really love to see, you know, Robert De Niro or whoever, you know,
right.
your
yeah.
favorite actor is, because you feel attracted to that person. That person has magnetic attraction. Someone like mm-hmm. Marilyn Monroe, I mean, she was, you know, she almost cornered on the market on magnetic attraction. She was so mm-hmm. universally attractive to everyone because she had this kind of magic, and that came from the pranic energy. It came from her energy field being filled with this life force energy. It's very magnetic. It's very sexy.
The other thing in the book is exercises to help you if your aura or energy field is being depleted, especially if you're in the healing business or in the massage business, and have clients that might put little energy hooks into you and then drain energy off after they leave. You want to talk about that?
I'd love to talk about that. You know, there are people that we call psychic sponge. A psychic sponge is a person who absorbs the energy around them as a sponge absorbs water. And what mm-hmm. happens is they get so drained all day long as they are meeting new people, as they're involved in different situations, they're becoming more and more and more drained. And they're feeling like people around them are like energy vampires that are just siphoning off their energy all day long. And by the end of the day, all they can do is just lie down on the bed completely exhausted. They can't do anything except just collapse. And, mm-hmm. I mean, that's an extreme example, but there are many people who are finding that to one degree or another is going on. And that's why it's really vital to learn how to close off your energy field to those untoward energies and to open your energy to higher energies. So if you like, I can teach your listeners a little affirmation to help them do that
sure.
right now.
Sure.
So as you say this affirmation, it's a good idea to pretend as though your higher self is saying the affirmation and not your ego self. So you're coming from the higher aspect of your being when you're speaking. And you might say, well, how do I do that? Well, you just pretend. Pretend as though your higher self is saying this affirmation. So you just say the following. I am in control. I am one with God. I am the only authority in my life. I am divinely protected by the light of my being. I close off my aura and body of light to the lower astral levels of mind, and I open to the spiritual world. Thank you, God, and so it is.
That's great. Thank you.
Yeah. So that's a really powerful affirmation. I call it the self-authority affirmation. And that will, if you use that on a regular basis, you will no longer be a psychic sponge. You'll no longer imbibe these untoward energies all day long. You no longer feel drained. You'll feel more and more energized, actually.
Great. Well, we're coming up to the end of our hour. Would you like to give your contact information?
Sure. You can go to my website, which is www.drsusan.org. That's drsusan.org. And also, I have another website called divinetravels.com. That's divinetravels.com. All right, so at drsusan.org, you can see all of my books. You can read the first chapter of all of my books. You can listen to radio interviews and read teleseminars. You can learn a lot of things just by going to that website. Also, the divinetravels.com, you can find out about my upcoming tours, retreats, and cruise ship seminars and amazing tours to sacred places and sacred destinations throughout the world, and check on that at divinetravels.com. And when you join the mailing list at that website, you will find out about all these various different offerings, different places that you can visit and have amazing spiritual experiences at these spiritual vortexes.
So I want to let the audience know that Susan has another book called The Power of Chakras that I want to have her back on to discuss because of the importance of chakras in as the next, I guess, chapter when you're studying your energy system. You need to know about your chakras, especially as for your physical health and emotional health. The chakras are very, very important. So we look forward to that interview. Well, would you like to give our audience maybe an inspirational thought before we close out?
Well, at this time, the world is changing very rapidly, and we can no longer depend upon the things that we had depended upon in the past, such as the various institutions that we have thought in the past would sort of save us or take care of us. We find that our savings are dwindling. We find that we don't have our pension, you know, all these things. Everything's changing.
Mm-hmm.
And so at this time, this is the time when we need to learn how to depend upon ourselves. We need to learn how to become self-sufficient and to be able to become strong within ourselves. And by enhancing our energy field, by increasing the chronic energy in our field, we can not only survive, but thrive. We can become very strong, very influential, and thereby we will become all that we can be. We can develop our ability to live our true purpose, our true destiny, that which we came on earth to do. And that is a very inspired way to live. So we can learn how to do that, and we can develop that through meditation and through various other practices that I recommend. And so I recommend that you do practice and that you do learn how to enhance your energy field, because you'll have a much more inspired and loving and powerful life.
Well, thank you. They're true words. And especially now, I think there's more energy available for spiritual development. I think it's a good time
to
do that.
It's a different world than it was, for example, 50 years ago when I started out on this path. We're in a completely different world now. There is much more support for your spiritual development at this time, energetically. The world is, there's a lot more spiritual vibration in the atmosphere than there used to be.
Right. And also a lot more teachers and a lot more books and a lot more information, radio shows, everything. So it's all around, and much of it is free. I mean, much of it doesn't require to spend a lot of money in case you're out of a job, you know. And if you're out of a job, spiritual development would be one of the best things you can do, you know, because it teaches you how to create a job. So that would be really good.
That's
so anyway, thank you. Thank you very much, Susan. I really appreciate your spending time with us today and hope to have you back for The Power of Chakras. And we've been interviewing Dr. Susan Chomsky, who has written The Power of Auras, great book for understanding your aura, your energy field, and how to optimize it for health, financial well-being, and well-being of your relationships. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you. I've enjoyed it tremendously.
Well, next week we have on Temple of Health, Shamong Singh, Your Journey to Enlightenment, 12 Gliding Principles to Connect with Love, Courage, Commitment, and the New Dawn. And then on the 15th, Edward Malkowski, Return of the Golden Age, Ancient History to Our Collective Future. And on the 22nd, Dr. Susan Martinez, The Mysterious Origins of Hybrid Man, Crossbreeding, and the Unexpected Family Tree of Humanity. Noetic Science will be given in February by Tricia McCannon, Discovering Your Life Purpose, Astrology and Working with Archetypes. That's on the 20th at the Dunwoody office at 7:15. And we have a free movie and group presentation by Dr. Greenberg on the 25th at the Georgetown office as well. Thank you very much for joining us. This is Dr. Susan Kolb with Temple of Health Radio Show. Join us next week.